from Rochester, New York, this is Mad Dog Movies, Episode 8. Welcome to the show. This is host Mike Boas. In our previous episode, my co-host John Vincent and I were discussing our trip to the Buffalo Niagara Film Fest, and today's show is a continuation of that conversation. We'll be talking about the film Document of the Dead, and then a little later we talk about our special effects hero, Stan Winston. Speaking of low-budget independent filmmaking, Roy Frumkes was at the Buffalo Niagara Film Festival.
Is it Frumkes or Frumkes?
You know, I think he said Frumkes.
Frumkes.
I keep wanting to say Frumkes in my head, but yeah, Frumkes. And he was involved in Street Trash and the Stepfather series, and he was there to show his latest cut of Document of the Dead. Now, Document of the Dead, a lot of people know because it's been out on DVD from Synapse, and also another version of it came out with the Dawn of the Dead box set. And I thought maybe you had seen it back in the day, but it didn't get a lot of distribution.
There was no place for me to see it. You know, it came out when he originally made it, but I don't remember ever seeing it on video.
So his main thrust back in 79 was, let's do sort of an educational film about George Romero and the way he works. So it had a lot of stuff in it about the making of Martin, and sort of an analysis of his cinematic techniques in Martin, which was a few years before that, and then how he was working on Dawn of the Dead. 10 years later, he came back and added some footage and shot new stuff when they were doing Two Evil Eyes with Dario Argento. So when they were doing Land of the Dead, he said, hey, let's shoot some more. When they were doing just last year or 2 years
Diary
ago.
Diary of the Dead.
Diary of the Dead, and he shot some more then. So now he had to take out some footage to make room for the new footage. And he's like, you know what? If the audience misses it, there's always the old versions on DVD they can go back and watch. So later on this fall probably is when Synapse will release this latest version, the definitive documentary.
And we had an opportunity to see a rough cut of it at the festival, which is nice.
He and his editor were there, and they were sort of looking for feedback. And I gave him a couple tips, and I think I stepped on his toes a little. I was like, it's like, this didn't make any sense to me. He's like, oh, what do you mean? What do you do? I'm like, I don't know. He's like, well, be more specific. I'm like, oh.
Way to get us thrown out of the festival.
No, I there was stuff in there that he had taken some interviews in a party in a hotel room at Chiller.
Right, yeah, and that was a little convoluted.
Well, he didn't introduce it. Right. So I said, hey, you should tell us where we are. And he's like, yeah, okay, I could just put Chiller, New Jersey, and because that's a convention in New Jersey. And I didn't know why we were in this hotel room.
And there were a lot of people from the films, unless you're really on the ball. I mean, because people do not look the same.
Yeah.
So a lot of people coming into the rooms, and then after a while, you might realize who they are.
Right.
You know, but it was
the original
tough,
Barbara from Night of the Living Dead.
Right.
She looked good.
Coming to get you,
Captain
Barbara.
Rhodes. Captain Rhodes. He looks very different now, but he's on the convention circuit. I always see him signing autographs. And there was a brief little bit from Tom Savini talking about his remake of Night of the Living Dead. So there's a lot of good stuff in there. And it was good, too, to see. You know, Land of the Dead has got some good extras on that DVD. Mm-hmm. So what did he do? He actually didn't spend a lot of time with Romero on that. He talked to his daughter and Simon Pegg and Edgar. I can't remember their names now. He talked to the two guys from Shaun of the Dead who were there to do
cameos.
I have
to work on my George Romero impression.
Well, back when we were making the film. You see,
you gotta adjust your giant glasses.
Yes. I
saw Romero speak when he was touring with Bruiser. He came.
Yeah, I went to that.
And
that
was. He's a great speaker, and he's very humble, and people are all asking him about the Dead movies, not really about Bruiser. But I liked Bruiser.
It was a very bizarre film.
I liked it better than Diary of the Dead, that's for sure.
Well, yeah. Well, I don't know. We talked about this in another podcast, but it's out on DVD now. Mm-hmm. Diary of the Dead.
That's right.
So you can see for
yourself.
They're
prepping a sequel, I think.
I thought I've talked to people, and it is split 50-50. Yeah. Probably about half the people liked it, half the people didn't like it. I mean, but again, you're going back to the kind of films that I worked on. It is really more like a low budget Mm-hmm. I mean, film.
Which is really how he loves to work.
Yeah, I
get the feeling he felt a little handcuffed on Land of the Dead, basically because of time.
Although Land of the Dead certainly looks better in terms of it's much more polished.
Well, it's huge, cast of thousands.
A lot more, effects and camera work is completely different.
But it's not as personal as the other films. I mean, it feels more.
Well, my favorite. Well, it's a toss up between Night of the Living Dead and Dawn of the Dead. They're still too. I tend to watch Dawn of the Dead more than Night of the Living Dead, even though I think Night of the Living Dead is a better film in terms of filmmaking. Mm-hmm.
Did we ever talk about the remake? Did you like the remake?
The Tom Savini remake?
Yeah, in an attempt to sort of regain the copyright, Romero produced and okayed a remake in 1990. It was done in color. Tony Todd as Ben. I love Tony Todd. Patricia Tallman as
it was
Barbara.
Okay. It was okay. But again, it was almost like what's his name? Did the version of Psycho?
Oh, Gus Van Sant.
Gus Van Sant's version of Psycho, where it's really almost a verbatim remake.
Well, there's some character differences. Barbara is not catatonic. She snaps out of it and becomes more of a character. And Ben, something happens to Ben at the end that's a little different.
Yeah.
But
it's for overall.
Yeah. It's not a classic, but I enjoy it. And it's kind of like seeing a stage production done by someone else.
I just didn't see the point.
Yeah.
Again, a film, you have Night of the Living Dead, which is, considered one of the greatest films of this genre ever made. I mean, really, really, it really shot these kind of films into the stratosphere. I mean, everybody started making, jumping on the bandwagon trying to make films like this. That would, again, see, Herschel Gordon Lewis may have started the seeing the gore, but I think Night of the Living Dead really put it in the context of excellent filmmaking.
Exactly. Yeah, there it's not just, hey, let's chop something up on camera and look at how gooey it is.
There was
a
meaning, behind what George Romero was doing.
I don't want to talk about it much, but Day of the Dead, there's a new remake of Day of the Dead out on
video. I saw that.
Did you actually watch it?
I did watch it.
Was it as bad as I heard?
It was not good. Yeah. It was not as bad as I thought it was going to be.
Oh, well, okay.
And it was directed by...
Steve Miner. From the Friday the 13th movies.
And again, you're dealing with fast-moving zombies. It was much more like...
Don't they crawl up on the ceiling and stuff like that?
It was much more like 28 Days Later.
You know what turned me off? Is there a puking zombie on the cover?
There is a puking zombie in the movie.
Yeah, because I saw it on the cover and went, how? Okay, that's just low. I mean, that's just... I'm not going to... I mean... put it in the movie, but put it on the cover. It's just like I'm going
but,
to walk
you know,
to the,
it was. I you know, I tend to, even though I like horror films and stuff. It's rare that I see horror films that are really, really good that I actually like. And so I.
So keep, your expectations I keep, are so low.
They're horribly low. They're very, very low for these types of movies. So when it's not a complete pile of junk, I'm like, oh, okay.
All right. Okay. Low expectations. Good to keep in mind.
Well, when it comes to these films,
I'll tell you who. Someone that raised my expectations of creatures and creature films was Stan Winston. We'll take a break and come back and talk about Stan Winston. And we're back.
We never really went anywhere.
No, we're still sitting here. We're just pressing buttons. So it hit me pretty hard when I heard Stan Winston had died.
Yeah, I was a big surprise. I had usually I get information from the West Coast about when people are sick, and I didn't hear a thing about it.
Maybe he'd been keeping it a secret, or it was just family that knew.
Well, David Allen, when he died, I had no idea he was sick. I didn't know he died until sometime afterwards, and I was fairly close to him, mm-hmm.
Had you ever met Stan?
A couple of times.
Really?
In fact, at first, I was at his studio. I didn't meet him this time, but when I was, it was back in the early 80s, I had a friend of mine that was working on, what was the film that just came out?
Monster Squad.
Thank you. Monster Squad.
Yeah.
And Stan was doing Monster Squad, and my friend Dave Kinlan was doing the mechanics for all the creatures and stuff for that film. So I had gone out to L.A. to visit my buddy Derek. who was, you know, I think he was sculpting. He was doing a lot of other stuff. Then we went over there to see Dave because Dave was from Rochester. And so I went to Stan Winston's studio, and it was the first thing I see when I walk in is the Queen Alien's head,
right,
from Aliens. And I was like, holy mackerel, I guess I'm in L.A. This is the first time I went to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And then the Terminator robot was Terminator robot wasn't there, but there was all kinds of stuff from the different films. I remember
Pumpkinhead
seeing,
maybe.
Well, no, I remember seeing all the heads of Christopher Lloyd. From I think it was Amazing Stories.
Amazing Stories. His head comes off and rolls.
But they had the in the head from that was amazing because I was pretty young at the time, and to see the actual head from Aliens, the Queen Alien. It's all they could bring back was the head because it cost too much money, and I'm like, oh man, I can't believe it.
And what, they shot it in England or?
They shot it in England. Yeah. So they fly the whole creature out there, but couldn't afford to fly the whole thing back, so they just brought back the head. But they had it, you know, right there in the shop, and mm-hmm. I was blown away by that, and there, Dave Kenlon was there doing all the mechanics for the bats for
Monster Squad.
Thank
right.
you, for Monster Squad.
You're never going to remember that.
I'm never going to remember.
Once upon a time, it was one monster per movie. Those were the good old days.
We're the Monster Squad. Only one way to kill a werewolf.
Kick him!
The Monster Squad, rated PG-13.
I saw that on my birthday, my 13th birthday. It was 87. I love that movie. I love the creatures. I love the fact, looking back on it, I love the fact that they took the classic Universal creatures and sort of updated them without just changing them for the sake of changing them. I mean, the Gill Man looks so cool. And
yeah, it was pretty impressive stuff. Wow. He had a lot of talented people working for him. A lot of talented people working right. for him.
And they'll keep working. I mean, it's just sad that, I mean, he's one of those guys that, like, made me want to be in movies.
Well, we mentioned this earlier, Gargoyles, which was his first really breakout film. And it was a small film made in the early 70s for television.
Yeah, it's about gargoyle creatures out in the middle of the desert, desert.
And it was, as a kid seeing it, was really creepy. And the makeup jobs are really effective because they're full body suits, and with wings and everything. And at the time, it was the stuff would still pass today.
And so it came to pass that while man ruled on Earth, the gargoyles waited, lurking, hidden from the light. Reborn every 600 years in man's reckoning of time, the gargoyles joined battle against man to gain dominion over the earth. In each coming, the gargoyles were nearly destroyed by men who flourished in greater numbers. Now it has been so many hundreds of years that it seems the ancient statues and paintings of gargoyles are just products of man's imagination. In this year, with man's thoughts turned toward the many ills he has brought upon himself, man has forgotten his most ancient adversary, the gargoyles.
But I met Stan twice. One time was at a backstage at a makeup competition festival.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, that was so long ago.
Screaming Mad George there?
What a whack job. Screaming Mad George was there. He was the one that was running this show. And I remember this young kid named Eddie Yang, who I got to know a little bit out there, 17-year-old kid, Eddie Yang. He had done this makeup thing and was entering the contest, and he did pretty well. So I had helped him backstage with his outfit, and so I had a chance to meet Stan and Rick Baker, and it was just nothing more than hello, nice to meet you kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it was still pretty interesting. And Eddie Yang went on to do sculpting for Rick Baker, so he did a lot of the big movies that you see. And then when I met him one other time, I can't remember what it was.
What was the premise of the show? Was it like paid audience that come in to see?
Yeah, it was very strange. It was a very strange thing. And people don't know what Screaming Mad George was or is. He was a gentleman that was from Japan. He was in the special makeup effects and a very bizarre person. He did a film called Society.
With Brian Yuzna.
And which was, you know, I can't even describe what the makeup effects stuff he did. But he also did...
Well, the climax of Society is this like mass orgy of flesh, all the bodies morphing and changing and melting into each other. It's one of those underground, you know, cult movies that really gross and disgust lots of people.
I talked to him, the few times I talked to him, he was incoherent. He was just a strange, I remember this one story that he used to wear makeup. He used to wear eyeliner and blue, you know, eyeshadow and you know, make his cheeks all rosy and puff his hair out. And he was going to tattoo his makeup on. And Steve Wang, who knew him, Steve Wang is probably one of the best, if not the best, sculptors and painters in the business. He was friends with Screaming Man George, and he convinced him not to do it. It was just a nutcase. And he came out for they had this band on somewhere the videotape is out there. They used to sell the videotape. I'm actually in the videotape that they sold. But Screaming Man George comes out on the stage and with this fake pregnant makeup thing, and he rips his belly open and all his guts come out with a dead baby and spilling all on the stage. And here all the judges are Stan Winston, there's Rick Baker, and Dick Smith was there too. You know, so all these guys, I'm like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. He eventually ended up going back to Japan.
Yeah.
Screaming by George. But he did, we talked about the movie that I worked on called Freaked. That was a pretty big budget show. And my job, there was a scene in the film where all these businessmen get covered in all this, you know, goo that makes, you know, circus freaks.
Right.
And they morph into this one shoe. And it was like this veiny shoe. And Screaming Mad George sculpted the shoe.
Right.
And then I took the shoe and then we made a mold of it. And I designed and built a stop motion armature that actually went into that puppet. And it's on screen for about 5 seconds.
Right. So Stan Winston.
So back to Stan Winston.
No, my history just personally was in high school, like 1990, 91. I'm 15, 16 years old. I start watching action movies, more fantasy movies, and horror. And, you know, I watch Aliens, Predator, and I started learning, oh my gosh, these aliens. After you watch Aliens like a dozen times, a little light bulb goes off in my head going, those aren't, you know, that's really someone in a suit, and they're scaring the heck out of me, and they're aliens, jumping around on the walls.
Yeah, that was good.
I could not believe, and then I started trying to figure out how they did have.
Well, Carlo Rambaldi did the original one,
of course,
for Alien.
Well, no, Giger
designed it,
and Rambaldi made it work.
Carlo Rambaldi, who also did E.T.
Yeah, but there's pictures of Giger actually sculpting the thing.
Yeah, but Carlo Rambaldi is the one who made the thing. He did all the mechanics, and he made it work. You know, right. Giger was the artistic,
right?
But Carlo Rambaldi is actually the one who made the mechanical aspect of the suit. They went from doing that to a lighter version of that because it was a really heavy duty suit.
Yeah.
So they made it. They had leotards, and they would make these foam pieces in the Giger style.
Yeah.
And attach it to them, and for a lot of these things that were jumping around, it was really, you know, pretty good.
And you know, there's tons of aliens. Of course, you got the chest bursters. Yeah, I mean the face huggers, and you got the queen alien, which is just
that's what impressed me, and what. You know, coming from a guy who's a miniature effects guy, and James Cameron kind of had the same background that I did in the sense.
Sure.
He started off doing, you know, this low budget visual effects, working for Corman. So he utilized quite a bit of the miniature effects. And if you watch the sequence where the payloader and the alien are kind of fighting each other, it's unbelievable. And half of that is miniature effects. Right. And Doug Beswick.
I didn't know that until a couple years ago. I never really thought about it.
Doug Beswick, another gentleman that I knew out in LA, just an absolute genius. But he also worked for Rick Baker and did American Werewolf in London and he everything. And he was one of the forerunners of the whole mechanics concept behind visual effects. Mm-hmm. And he brought to life that miniature alien, the queen alien.
Yeah.
And I had a chance to look close up at the puppet and the mechanics of the puppet at a shop, and I was dumbfounded. I mean, especially for the time.
Well, plus they also had the miniature of the loader.
The loader, too. Yeah. It was very impressive, and I'm like, you know, and then you watch the movie, and it matches so well, the photography of the stuff that they shot, the live-action footage it mixed with the miniature footage was just unbelievable to this day. And that's a testimony to James Cameron because of his effects background and as a director, and Doug Beswick and some of these other guys that worked on this stuff was just absolutely amazing. To this day, I mean, there's no computer graphics, no computer compositing, nothing. It was literally set the camera up, shoot the stuff, build a miniature setup that looks just like the full scale. Mm-hmm. You got a miniature puppet that looks just like the full size. You shoot it the proper frame rate. You have the right amount of smoke. You have the right everything, and then the editing, and it was really amazing. And I watched that over and over again. And it still impresses me.
Well, the behind-the-scenes stuff on Aliens, where you actually see Winston and his crew trying to figure out how to do the alien. Mm-hmm. What if it had extra arms here? What if we put a guy in here, and they have the great big sort of black material? It's like garbage bags almost, and they're just working on the structure of it.
Right.
All right, let's put another puppeteer in here, and they're working it all out. And because that thing... I mean, the way it moved and it's scary.
It's simple too. I mean, a lot of these things, I mean, if you look at the stuff, you are surprised at how simple.
It's also the biggest puppet they'd ever made,
right,
and you need a crane to move it around.
Right, right. But the concept, it's basically a marionette.
Theater. Yeah, yeah.
You know, the full scale was basically a marionette with some mechanical moving parts to it. It was brilliant. I mean, absolutely brilliant. And, you know, I wish things today were, you know, impressed me like that, but everything's CG. And
so in 1990, I'm watching those on video. I'm and of course Predator, Pumpkinhead, and then I started reading up on a guy and finding out, oh, he did Monster Squad, which I loved a few years before that, and that was the year 91 was when Terminator 2 came out, mm-hmm. which I mean I could not believe. That was like the most perfect movie I'd ever seen. Terminator 2 blew me away. I'm 17 years old, just alone in the theater. It was like the first rated R movie I went to, you know? And I was like, so I loved that. And what else? He had freaking Edward Scissorhands and Batman Returns all came out around the same time too. Mm-hmm. And he did work on those. And that's when I was like, this is a guy I got to watch. And when they announced that he'd be doing dinosaurs for Jurassic Park, I ran right out and read the book immediately because I couldn't believe he's going to make a life-size T-Rex.
Another thing I was very impressed with was the T-Rex from that. And that was the first time they actually used computer-aided
puppetry.
Puppetry.
They had like a Waldo on like a joystick.
Well, yeah, they had the, logarithms that would... They had actually had to program it because it was so large that when the creatures would move... And they would, when they stopped, they'd shake. And, of course, life doesn't, living things don't really do that. But they had to have all this program, all the software written so that it would, they'd do in stop motion and an animation called slow in, slow outs.
Yep.
And because things just don't start and stop in real life, they always build up to a small degree and they slow down to a small. And if the puppets got wet, the foam skins got wet. Yeah, it would screw it all up.
They did the math, and then they said, okay, now we're going to turn on the rain machine, and everything gets waterlogged.
The foam, because foam, it wasn't silicone or anything. It was foam rubber. It would soaked up all the water.
To reprogram it.
So, but that was the first time that I'm aware of that they used that to such an extent, and I thought that was pretty impressive.
And because those were so large, too, some of those, they worked with, I think his name is Michael Lenteri, who had a background in rides. Those amusement park rides that move areas of seats for the audience and that sort of thing. It was real, brilliant.
Yeah, the creature would be on a big gimbal, a computerized gimbal that they use for aircraft simulation.
Mm-hmm. He continued to, anytime I saw his name attached to something, I was going to be interested. Him and Rick Baker, I can name half a dozen other guys that I'm interested in, but those are my top.
Well, it started off really with, Dick Smith.
Mm-hmm.
As the one who originated this type of thing. I mean, you could say that Chamberlain, who did Planet of the Apes, and those things, really kind of started with the makeup appliance stuff with that. But Dick Smith really is the father of this kind of thing, and it was because he was a nice guy, and he would share all his information.
Yep.
He shared it to Rick Baker. He shared it, you know, to anybody, Carl Fullerton, and he would share. I mean, he shared it with me. I was in 10th grade.
That's amazing.
I found his number. I got a hold of his number, and I was in 10th grade. Altered States had just come out.
Yep.
I called him up, and I said, Mr. Smith, I'm a big fan. Trying to do something, wondering if he could kind of give me some advice. He stayed on the phone with me for 45 minutes with this dumb kid from Rochester, New York, mm-hmm. told me explicitly how to do the effects from Altered States, you know, the air bladders, the underneath the arms and all that. And he went into detail, and he was just the nicest guy, you know, that you could possibly meet. And all these people learned everything from Stan Winston, got all his information that came through Dick Smith and everybody after that.
Well, that'll wrap it up for another episode of Mad Dog Movies.
So soon.
Ah, yes. Well, we've rambled, and I don't know, felt good to get back, get our sea legs back. And what are we going to talk about in future episodes? I know you've got an intern of some sort.
Well, I wouldn't say he's an intern. He's a guy that I know locally that's really, he's an artist, and he's really into the horror films.
Oh, can't he be the Mad Dog movie?
The zombie films. And he went to the Horror Hound Film Festival in Pittsburgh. So yep. We're going to talk to him and see how that was. And down the road, we're going to send him off to the other festivals around. And then he's going to give reports and try to get some.
I would go to more of those if I could get someone to go with. Maybe if I.
Yeah. Well, you two.
I haven't met this guy. Maybe we can go rent a room together. Yeah. That didn't come out right at all.
I don't think he's your type.
But yeah, I considered going to that one, and I can I would have.
He wanted me to go. I was going to go.
Yeah. It's so much fun.
I had a baby.
That's right. Yeah. The baby, of course.
Actually, my wife had the baby.
I've been to a few conventions. I was there. I'm very impressed that, yes. You were there, and
I was right in the delivery room and saw the whole thing.
Jeez.
Blood everywhere. It was
memories of Screaming Mad George.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I'm glad that didn't run through my head.
So we'll talk conventions with him in a future episode, and we'll come up with some other stuff.
Yeah, and also, you know, if any questions on filmmaking, any questions about visual effects, creature effects, what it was like in the day to shoot films without computers. Let us know. I'd love to talk about it.
That's right. If you'd like to write to us, our email is feedback@maddogmovies.com. And if you want to see our show notes, it's at maddogmovies.com/podcast. Music for this episode was provided by Keith Handy. Visit him online at keithhandy.com.